From APM in Emeryville, California, I'm Molly Wood, filling in for Ben Johnson. This is Marketplace Tech. There are growing questions about whether Russian cyber attacks influenced the outcome of the U.S. presidential election. President Obama has asked for an investigation, and Republican congressional leaders said this week they support it. But yesterday, President-elect Donald Trump tweeted that unless you catch hackers in the act, it's very hard to determine who's doing the hacking. Here's Simon Crosby, the chief technology officer of security software vendor Bromium. Simon, is it possible to unravel a cyber attack after the fact?
There is a very well-established practice called forensic intelligence gathering, which is pretty good at finding out really good evidence that something has happened. If you have access to computers used in an attack, you can often find correlations between these different layers of the software and applications and operating system and find information which leads you to be able to put together all these clues and state without much doubt that this was a computer that was used in a hack or this particular address on the internet was used as part of an attack.
Simon, if you would, what are the elements that will be investigated in terms of trying to figure out how much or whether Russia tampered with this election?
Well, three good things to look at would be the evidence of doxing. So specifically, I think everybody's aware of the fact that email accounts were tampered with and that information that people would have kept private was put in public domain. We saw that with DNC and Debbie Wasserman-Schultz and Podesta and so on. So doxing is essentially exposure of information which you really didn't want out there. The second one would be propaganda, that is actually promoting false information using computer systems, robots, both bots sitting on Twitter or Facebook, with a specific goal of making the volume of that false information louder than anything else. And then the third one, which I think is less probable, is essentially hacking of individual voting machines in specific counties to influence the outcome in particular counties or states.
In your opinion, is it going to be possible to prove interference to a level that might quell some of this controversy?
Where forensics is really good is at establishing how people manage to penetrate accounts such as Colin Powell's or Podesta's or the DNC and find evidence of the malware used, where it came from, and how those attacks were prosecuted. We can get great evidence there, and I think there's a lot to be learned.
That's Simon Crosby, co-founder and CTO of security software vendor Bromium. Simon, thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure.
We may not yet know what the year 2017 will bring in terms of technology, but your listener support of Marketplace guarantees we'll all be better informed and better prepared, flying cars or not. Make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st.
I'm really excited going back to school shopping already. I know, you're probably wondering why.
That is Annie. She's 10 years old and she has a YouTube channel called Annie's Vlogs. See, kids aren't just watching most of their videos on YouTube these days. They're starring in them and they're sometimes pretending to star in them. Jessica Contrera wrote about this trend as part of the Screen Age series at the Washington Post. She joins me now. Hi, Jessica. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, Jessica, tell me what's going on here. It seems like a lot more kids are popping up with their own YouTube channels. Do you have a sense of how common this really is?
It's pretty common for kids to, even if they're not posting it, to feel like it's an important part of their lives to record their lives. And because there are benefits to putting it on YouTube, there's a financial incentive, it can be kind of a creative exercise. More and more parents aren't as freaked out by the idea of putting their kids on YouTube, and they're saying, okay, well, I'm going to watch everything you put on there, but sure, go ahead.
It's like peer pressure in the digital age. Is there any way to quantify it? Would YouTube give you any numbers about how many channels there are?
No,
I mean, technically they don't allow it, right?
Yeah, so that was the interesting thing. When I reached out to YouTube to talk about this and try and kind of quantify, you know, how many you know, YouTubers are under the age of 10, or I mean, even how many videos there are on YouTube, they weren't quite ready with those numbers because what they believe is that YouTube is a platform for kids 13 and up. They you know, tried to repeat that many times because there is a lot of content on there that's just not appropriate for kids. But that certainly hasn't stopped kids and parents from getting really involved, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's just something you have to look out for.
I have to say, I read your story and I felt like you were living at my house. I have a 9-year-old son who is constantly narrating everything that he's doing. What is this thing where they all think they're on YouTube all the time, even if they're not?
At first I thought, there's no way. This must be a fluke story that I'm hearing from a parent, you know, before I even found the family that I wrote about. And then I just talked to more and more parents whose kids, they'd find their kids saying, oh, my dad's going to the grocery store right now. You know, we're going to pick up some bananas. And they'd say, who are you talking to? And the kids are like, oh, the audience.
Are there obvious downsides or dangers to those kids being on YouTube? You mentioned things like comments or social pressure in your story.
The family that I spent a lot of time with, their parents are very actively involved. And that is a full-time job sort of monitoring what it's like to put your kid out there. You know, the mother has to maintain this entire list of blocked words so that the commenters don't call her 10-year-old daughter a C word. I mean, that's a very real scary thing. You know, even just trying to maintain your audience and gain followers. And it's fun for the kids. I really do think that they're having fun. But it is work also. And you just have to kind of weigh whether that's what you want to be doing at 7 or 10 or even younger than that.
That's Jessica Contrera, reporter with The Washington Post. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
A report out today says Uber is doing a terrible job protecting your personal information. And those allegations come from some of the people in charge of Uber's security. The full report is available at the Reveal podcast from the Center for Investigative Reporting. And as it happens, Marketplace Tech was produced today from the Reveal studios at the Center for Investigative Reporting. I'm Molly Wood. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.